Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going to be talking about American Sniper, Black Hat, The Wedding Ringer, and Paddington. So there's four wide releases happening this week. A lot of big movie opportunities and choices in the theater. We're also going to be talking about some news. I'm going to be giving you my take on the Oscar nominations, which came out this weekend. Also, there's an interesting news story about a woman who might be going to jail for showing a movie. We'll get to that in a minute. There's going to be the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the world famous DVD roundup. But first, I want to welcome a new station to the fold, 1480 WSAR AM in Fall River, Massachusetts. Welcome to Fat Guy Nation. Now, this is how you can get a hold of me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. Of course, you can always recommend at fatguysatthemovies.com if you want to send me an idea for a movie that I need to watch and give my thoughts on. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. We actually have a voicemail. I'm going to play that probably next week. My apologies to the person who sent it. I've just got too much to talk about this week with news and the movies. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. You can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Yeah, movie news is kind of crazy with movie news. I'm going to lead this off with a story in my backyard, Columbus, Ohio, my hometown where I live. Apparently, a Columbus City Schools substitute teacher named Sheila Kearns showed her Spanish class. She was substituting for a Spanish class. She doesn't speak Spanish, but she showed the kids the ABCs of Death, which is an anthology horror movie that came out last year, I believe. It's 26 different short films. Each one is about death in some ways. Those were the only rules, and they got a bunch of filmmakers to do it. Apparently, the reason she chose it is because she thought it was in Spanish. Well, it is. There's a couple segments that are in Spanish, but it's also in Japanese and English. There's various languages because each of the directors speaks a different language. Well, here's the thing. She showed it to five separate classes until the assistant principal came in and was like, "What are you doing?" And she tried to fast forward and she paused and there were naked breasts on screen. The kids in the class aged from 14 to 18, and she was put on trial for disseminating harmful material to juveniles, and she was convicted, actually. This actually is relatively new news. It just happened at the end of the week. She was convicted on 4 out of 5 counts, felony-level charges, of disseminating material that's harmful to kids and juveniles. What's interesting, as I've seen people, I know a lot of people who do horror movies and are fans of horror movies, and they're like, "This is terrible. This is just a movie. They've seen worse on the internet." Here's the thing. This was in a school. This is not some kid who pulls the video off his dad's shelf and shows it to his friends at home. This was a school showing it in class. The kid did not have an option to leave. The parents were not made aware of this. I know that there are some kids that have seen movies like Schindler's List, which is an R-rated film that has some pretty disturbing content in it, but it's done for historical and educational purposes. And whenever a school shows a movie like that, they send home permission slips and you can opt out of it. Apparently in this school, in these classes, some of the kids were really bothered by it because there's some pretty crazy stuff. I've seen the movie. I like the movie. I think it's a good movie. And the sequel just came out in theaters a couple months ago and should be out on DVD and Blu-ray in just a couple weeks. These are good movies, but they are not appropriate for kids, period, at all. Now, getting a felony level charge is pretty steep. But you know what? The law is the law. And this is what's interesting. She was convicted on 4 out of 5 counts. And the reason they convicted on her on 4 is because she showed it 5 times. The jury was even like, "You know what? This is a terrible movie to show kids. You shouldn't be showing it to kids as young as 14. And yeah, some of the kids are going to, it's not going to bother them, but there are some kids that are going to be bothered by this. And the parents are going to be really ticked off. And a parent should have the right to restrict what their 14-year-old sees in a movie that has nothing to do with class." The jury basically said, "Okay, you get one. You showed it once, oops, but you shouldn't have showed it again. You certainly shouldn't have showed it four more times. That's why she got convicted. They actually made the right decision. Now, there's a little bit of wiggle room in kind of questioning the legalities of it because it had to be determined whether or not it was obscene. There's a real gray area, and I don't know the law of Ohio to that degree, but it sounds like the obscenity is iffy. I mean, there's dirty bookstores all over Columbus. So there's dirty bookstores and strip clubs and places that you can get pornographic material, but it's restricted. It's age restricted. Where you get in trouble is disseminating it to kids. And if you are saying, well, it's just a horror movie, go watch it or go look up on Wikipedia, ABCs of Death, and look up L is for libido. That's the letter L entry. It's disturbing. I've seen it, and I remember watching it going, that's pretty gross and pretty crazy. And while it doesn't bother me and it doesn't corrupt me, I probably wouldn't let my 13-year-old see it. And my 13-year-old sees some pretty crazy stuff because I'm into movies, and he understands how movies work. But some kids aren't. And yeah, it's kind of crazy that a woman might be going to jail. She could go to jail for this, up to 4 years. But it's because she showed it to kids in a captive audience. They were not allowed to opt out, and their parents weren't informed or allowed to opt them out. You can't say, oh, well, they see whatever they want to on the internet. That may be true for some kids, but not all kids. And it's not your decision. And what's interesting, it's not rated R. It's unrated. It was released unrated. And with good reason. I mean, if she were teaching Serbian, you can't just show a Serbian film to kids and say, well, it's teaching them the Serbian language. There's a lot of offensive content in a Serbian film. There's a lot of offensive content in Human Centipede. And to the wrong person, you know, to somebody who doesn't watch horror movies, that stuff can be pretty shocking and disturbing and can give them nightmares and can mess them up psychologically. It can. It may not mess you up, but it can. So yeah, this was kind of the right decision. She's probably not going to serve jail time because she's not going to be sentenced until March. But still, this needed to happen in response to that. Now, that's really the only news story I'm going to talk about at this point. That's it. We got to move on. Because it's now time for the trailer. All right, the first movie I want to talk about in the trailer park is Big Game, which opened sometime in 2015. They actually don't have a release date associated with this, but it stars Samuel L. Jackson as the President of the United States.
36 minutes ago, we got an evac distress signal from Air Force One.
From what planet are you from?
Is this some kid I'm talking to?
Who are you?
President of the United States.
Prove it.
Any suggestions?
Find the president, bring him home.
This movie looks like it's a lot of fun, and it looks like it's going to be that throwback to the 80s action movies. Something like what The Expendables was trying to do with The Expendables 3. That's really about it. It may end up being just right direct to video or might go to VOD, but this looks pretty cool. This is not going to try and change anything. It's going to be disposable entertainment, but gosh, you know what? I'm looking forward to this one because it looks like it's going to kick butt. The next movie I want to talk about is Spy, which opens on May 22nd. It stars Melissa McCarthy. It's directed by Paul Feig, who directed Bridesmaids and The Heat. Two movies I absolutely hated, worth mentioning when we talk about this movie. It opens on May 22nd.
When I quit teaching and joined the CIA, I thought I was going to be this amazing spy, and I'm still just the same boring person I was.
You play it too safe.
I just hear my mom's voice. Just give up on your dream, Susan. Just to write that in my lunchbox.
She knows the identity of all our agents. We need someone to find the bomb without being detected, but it can't be any of you. We need someone invisible.
I'll do it.
Okay. Thanks, lunch lady.
Like I said, I hated Bridesmaids. I hated The Heat. But you know what? This movie actually looks pretty decent. I mean, maybe I'm not a huge fan of Paul Feig's delivery. I think it sometimes plods a bit. And that may have been from Bridesmaids because of the Judd Apatow influence. But Spy looks like it's cool. And what you know what it does is it takes Melissa McCarthy and it gives her something other than the stock obnoxious pariah character she played in Tammy and in Identity Thief and in The Heat and in Bridesmaids. She's doing something different, which is great because I think she's incredibly talented and I like to see her do something different. And this looks like she's going to be doing something different and can control a movie without being an obnoxious jerk. So I think this might be the first Paul Feig movie I like. We'll see in May. Opens on May 22nd. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Paddington and Black Hat. Because we can't go! There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, riding the ABCs of death into this next segment. One more thing about that whole ABCs of death thing. I don't consider that movie obscene. Oh, very few things I could consider obscene. But ABCs of death is not obscene. And I think people are going to start obsessing about that obscenity label. I don't think it has anything to do with it being obscene. I think it has to do with the fact that it was available to minors. And there's a lot of things that I don't consider obscene that I'm not going to show a 14-year-old. I think that's worth mentioning. A lot of people question the ratings. I don't know whether this movie may have gotten an NC-17 rating if it was submitted. But at the very least, it certainly would have gotten an R rating. And regardless of what you think the kids see on the internet and on their smartphones, you don't have the choice. You do not have the authority to circumvent parental authority. And that's just the way it is. And that's the way it's going to be. I hate to tell you, you may think, oh, there's a bunch of hick people in Ohio. I hate to tell you, that's the way it's going to be everywhere. Give me the most liberal state out there. They're going to have the same ideas. If this happened in Ohio, or if it happened in Massachusetts, or if it happened in California, or if it happened in Texas, Florida, Wisconsin, Omaha, Nebraska, or Seattle, Washington, you would probably end up with the same results because she showed it to minors and made them watch it because they couldn't leave the class without the parents' permission. And she showed it five times. If she just showed it once and was like, that was a terrible idea, then she actually would have gotten away with it. The other thing to note about this movie being shown, it's not saying you can't show the movie. It's saying you can't show this movie to 14-year-old kids, force them to watch, and not let their parents have a say one way or the other. So it's not an offense to the artists and the producers and the directors of this movie. It's an offense to showing this to a minor who should not be seeing this. She's probably just going to end up paying a fine, though. We'll find out in March. I'll try and remember to bring this back for discussion. But I need to move on and talk about movies. Let's talk about Paddington. In this film, a talking bear travels to London to find the explorer who discovered his family in Peru.
Stranger danger. There's some sort of bear over there. Probably what? Selling something.
Hello there.
Mary.
Hello. This young bear needs our help, Henry. It's just for one night.
Do bears even have names?
My name is... You try it. Mr. Brown, that is extremely rude.
Perhaps you'd like an English name.
An English name?
Paddington.
Sorry. I like it.
I remember when this was first being marketed, like sometime in the middle of last year, and it was supposed to have Colin Firth do the voice of Paddington, and he apparently didn't want to do it. He didn't feel he was appropriate for it. So they got Ben Whishaw, who plays Q in the new James Bond movies. He is playing the voice of Paddington, and he's great in it. And I gotta say, the trailers for this look terrible. They don't work. This trailer, the one that I played, that one looks good. But the original trailers for it didn't quite work. It looked too goofy. But you know what? This is just a charming little movie. I've heard people use the term lovely to describe it. And that's absolutely correct. It's very British. Okay, so it takes place in Britain. It's about the Paddington Bear, which is the little bear in the overcoat and hat. And if you read the books, I may have read the books when I was like five, but I don't recall much from them. But it's a sweet little movie. It's a charming, adorable little movie. The Paddington Bear is just beautifully animated, interacts with the live action actors incredibly well. The actors in it, Sally Hawkins is just she's adorable in this movie, playing this sort of Haddington's quote unquote mom. It's not, when I say it's very British, it feels like a British movie. It doesn't feel like an American animated film. And there's a fine distinction there, because it's goofy and it's wacky and it's a screwball comedy that's for parents and kids. But there's something different from the American version of that. It has a much more even keel. And even though it's completely ridiculous at times, I mean, you've got Hugh Bonneville, who's a very stuffy British guy. And he plays the role of Paddington's quote-unquote father, you know, the human father. And he's very game. He starts off very stiff and unappreciative of Paddington, but it just, they turn out to have a lovely little relationship. Nicole Kidman plays the bad guy in it, and she just eats it up. I give her a lot of credit for doing a smaller movie that isn't going to get a lot of award buzz. But she has a lot of fun with this. It reminds me of Meryl Streep in Into the Woods. Also, Peter Capaldi is in this, the new Doctor Who. It's nice to see. It's interesting to see him in a non-Doctor Who role now, because the Doctor is such a galvanizing character. So yeah, Paddington is great. I enjoyed it. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. The next film I want to talk about is Black Hat. Thor is released from prison to help track down a malicious cyber terrorist.
Some hacker is hitting our financial markets.
Four major banks, and that's just what we know about?
If we want clues to the hacker's identity, we need a man named Hathaway.
What do we know about this guy?
He's a convicted hacker serving 15 years.
Is he political? Terrorist attack, any declaration?
The guy we're working will drop the big hammer and not think twice about it.
He's on the move again.
Chicago, now China.
This is only the beginning.
Of course, it's not really Thor. It's Chris Hemsworth. I always call him Thor, because he will always be Thor in my mind. The biggest disappointment to me in this movie was the fact that, and never once, not at any point, does Chris Hemsworth wear a black hat. Now, I know that black hat means a kind of hacker who's malicious and only out for his own self-interest and profit, as opposed to a white hat hacker who's somebody who is directed to test the security of a place for the benefit of the place they're testing the security for. But I still think he should have had a black hat. That's my biggest problem with this movie. Anyways, it's directed by Michael Mann. And I'm not a huge Michael Mann fan. I his movies kind of leave me cold. And there's a real emotional disconnect with his films. And in this movie, it's all over the place. There are these scenes where these characters are having very intense emotional moments. And I'm just like, that's the way some of these scenes made me feel. There's very little investment you can have with the characters. And that's a big problem that Mann has. And when he ramps up the emotion, you end up with Daniel Day-Lewis screaming, stay alive, whatever you do, just stay alive, from Last of the Mohicans, which is supposed to be a very emotional moment, but it's kind of laughable. And a lot of people joke about that. And it's Daniel Day-Lewis, and he's a great actor. So when you got Chris Hemsworth playing against, you know, people like Viola Davis, who's a good actor, but there's very little emotional center in this film. But for a run-of-the-mill chase-em action movie, I mean, it's the same story we've heard, where the good guy's in prison for crime and he's taken out so he can catch a criminal, and it's him trying to win him back his freedom. We've seen that. I mean, that was the entire premise of the show White Collar. So we've seen this story before. It's nothing new. And it's not really approached very uniquely. We've seen a lot of what's on screen before. It runs a bit long. It's very Michael Mann. It has some incredibly weird moments where you kind of go, what? That line was in there? Seriously? They said that? And they're doing this? And now they're choosing to do this? It's not a perfect movie. And it really feels like it was maybe meant to be directed by Tony Scott before he died. But I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying it feels like a Tony Scott type of movie. They had to go get Michael Mann instead. It's okay. For a January release, it's okay, but it's really not that good. I have to say the Black Hat kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about American Sniper and The Wedding Ringer. We'll be right back. That Guy's at the Movies with Kevin Carr at the helm. Let's roll into two more new releases. The first one I'm not going to bury the lead for. This was my favorite film of 2014. And that is American Sniper. Clint Eastwood directs this biopic of Chris Kyle, the deadliest sniper in American military history.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. Would you be surprised if I told you that the Navy has credited you with over 160 kills? Do you ever think that you might have seen things or done some things over there that you wish you hadn't?
Oh, that's not me, no. I'm willing to meet my creator and answer for every shot that I took.
I am not what you call a just blanket fan of Clint Eastwood. Some of his movies are good. Some are better than others. I mean, like Gran Torino, I think was fine. Million Dollar Baby was good. I didn't think those were best of the year. But he's done some real duds. Even recently, The Changeling, that was long and boring. Flags of Our Fathers was boring. Letters from Iwo Jima was pretty good, though. And even this year, he had Jersey Boys. I thought this guy was retiring, by the way. Wasn't he supposed to retire? Wasn't he retiring from directing? That's okay. I mean, I'm glad that he did it because I thought American Sniper was brilliant. He did Jersey Boys, and I didn't particularly like Jersey Boys. But his directing style, his very deliberate, slow-paced directing style works for this movie because it's about a sniper. And while it does at one point turn into a bit of an action war film, something like Green Zone, they're on the run going after this bad guy, most of the movie is served by Clint Eastwood's gentle hand and the fact he's not Michael Bay. And that makes it work because a sniper sits there and just watches and then bam, does what he has to do. And then bam, has to do it again. But there's long drawn out periods, and that's how snipers work. The other thing about this movie is I think it really handles the PTSD angle. I've noticed in the theaters, you're starting to see trailers, and you hear it in the trailer that I played, where they're sort of acknowledging this. And I think that's good, because right after the Iraq War started, there were oodles of movies that came back that I thought did a real disservice to veterans, because it made them all look like complete head cases who couldn't manage to put their shoes on in the morning. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them where people, I mean, you had like Only the Brave and Stop Loss and Grace is Gone and Lions for Lambs and Rendition. You had tons and tons of these movies that were about the Iraq War and the War on Terror, and they just made the soldiers just screaming nutcases. And I thought that was highly disrespectful to our men and women in uniform. Eastwood does a great job showing that there are some serious moral decisions you have to make as a soldier or a SEAL in battle. And there are some really ugly components to war. And there are some very morally ambiguous acts that need to happen when you're in combat. Now, I've never been in combat. I've never been in the military. But I have the utmost respect for the people that are and that do this. And I think this serves them instead of blames them. And I think that's a good thing. Because there's a lot of blame being thrown directly at the American soldier. And let me take a minute and talk about some of the controversy that's surrounding American Sniper, where there are some people claiming that, oh, well, this is a wash of a movie, and it glosses over this thing and that thing, and that Chris Kyle may or may not have lied about, and it takes care of this, and he just liked killing people, and that's why he did it, and it glorifies guns. Well, okay, let's hit the gun argument first. Here's the thing: you don't become a sniper without a certain knowledge and excessive exposure to firearms. And I saw somebody complain. They said, oh, well, they just show that it's recreational. I'm like, well, yeah, he probably went hunting. You don't pick up a gun when you're like 22 and then suddenly find out that you're a brilliant shot. Like LeBron James. LeBron James didn't pick up a basketball when he was 17 years old and suddenly became the greatest basketball player that's living today. He probably had a basketball in his hands before he could say basketball. That's how you become great at something like this. And yes, Chris Kyle killed a lot of people, but he did it in the confines of the rules of engagement. And I know people are also complaining, oh, it's just about him killing Muslims. It's just about him killing brown people. Well, no, it's about him killing the enemy. And in the military, You may not like this, but this is the way the military works. You follow orders, and you are allowed to question the orders when it's so egregiously out there. Like they say, go in there and rape everyone in this village. The soldiers can refuse to do that. But if they're saying, get on this roof and shoot anybody who's going to try to throw a grenade at our troops, that's very legitimate rules of engagement. And true, military age is a broad spectrum, down to like 12 years old. Because unfortunately, in some of these combat zones, they do have 12-year-old kids lofting grenades at tanks. And you know what? There's got to be someone there to stop it, or the tank blows up. These are important things. This is how military works. And you may not like it, but you're benefiting from it. But I don't think this is just him glorifying killing brown people. He's trying to save brown people, if you want to use that derogatory term to shun this movie. No, he's doing his job. And he can't sit there and question, but like, wait a minute, these people here, what if they do that? No, you're told this is your, and the orders are followed, orders are given, and you got to follow them. That is how the military works. The chain of command, you can't question it all the way up. And yes, that does leave room for abuse, which happens at times, but that's how a military has to happen. You cannot send soldiers into a battlefield and say, well, you have to question every little thing. And, you know, maybe this person just had a bad childhood or something. No, you're given the rules of engagement. You follow those rules of engagement, and you got to make good with yourself and your creator when you die. And if you take lives in that, and that's what you have to do. And that's a ugly business, and people do that. And Chris Kyle did that. And whether or not you liked him, whether or not you think he lied about Jesse Ventura is irrelevant. This is about him in combat and the fallout from that. And I think it was a brilliantly done movie, and I think it's a fantastic film. And it's different than any other war film you're going to see. I guess for better or for worse, because some people I've heard say, well, it's kind of dull. And there's some liberties taken, sure, but it really works. I mean, it's a compelling, strong, thoughtful, and emotional film. So, yes, American Sniper totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's go to the next film. This movie is about as far different from American Sniper as you can get. It is The Wedding Ringer. Kevin Hart stars as a man who rents himself out to grooms who need a best man at their wedding.
I provide best man services for guys like yourself who lack in such areas. How you looking on groomsmen?
You need one or two?
I need seven.
You need seven?
What you're talking about is what we joke about.
And in less than 2 weeks?
Please help me.
God created the world in 7 days. We gotta do a whole lot more in a lot less time.
Who are these people?
Me?
It's a groomsman.
These guys cannot be my groomsmen. It looks like the entire cast of Goonies grew up and became rapists.
I am, first of all, thrilled to see Kevin Hart getting some more starring roles. He had Ride Along last year, which was okay, but Kevin Hart's a talented guy, but unfortunately he's been put into a lot of movies as the equivalent of the wacky neighbor. I mean, that's really what he was in Think Like a Man and Think Like a Man 2. He was not the main guy in those films. Even About Last Night, which came out last Valentine's Day, he and his partner in that movie were just throwaway wacky couple. The real heart and soul of the movie were the other two people. And I understand that that's kind of what he plays. I mean, in Grudge Match, he was the crazy guy. He was the wacky neighbor in Grudge Match. Here he finally gets a starring role. And him and Josh Gad, they're extremely funny. They've got great chemistry. Josh Gad, I think, is a talent that's being mined for good. And I think he's a very, very funny guy. And it's nice to see him get a pretty meaty role as well. This movie is funnier than it has any business being. And I was surprised at how much I laughed. It's way better than Ride Along. So it has some very funny moments. It has some stuff that retreads some similar ground. We see some of the same jokes we saw in stuff like Wedding Crashers. And there are points where it kind of skids off the rails a bit. And there's massive logicals. Do not try to think through this movie because it does not hold up. It's a house of cards that completely collapses with a burp. But it's still a funny movie. And doggone it if I didn't laugh. I'm going to say The Wedding Ringer kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Oscar nominations, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Everything is awesome. Kevin Carr coming back at you for Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's talk about the Oscars. The Oscar nominations were this week. And, you know, here's what's funny about the Oscars. Every year, the Oscar nominations come out. And then it's just this flood of this person got snubbed and that person got snubbed. And, oh my God, that guy got nominated, but not this person. And that's just, that happens every year. And it, quite frankly, sometimes just gets a little bit overdone. I do think that there are a couple important things to note in this Oscar. I'm not going to go through the whole list. Selma was nominated for Best Picture, and it got, I think, one other nomination for like song, but it's only in Best Picture. What's interesting is they expanded the category of Best Picture a couple years ago and said we can come up with 10 nominees instead of 5. And I think what's so insulting is when a movie doesn't get Best Picture. Like Foxcatcher got like Best Actor nomination, it got Best Supporting Actor nomination, got Best Director nomination, but not a Best Picture. They had 8. Just give it the 9th slot. You can have up to 10. Having fewer than 10 is kind of insulting to anybody who's not. I mean, those are real snubs, in my opinion. But I also thought what was a snub is Ava DuVernay is the director of Selma. And she did a fantastic job with that movie. And I remember saying a while ago, here is Hollywood's chance. Last year, all we heard about was the inequality in Hollywood, the inequality of female directors, the inequality of the African American in Hollywood, and how things get whitewashed. And we heard nothing but that last year. This was your chance to give a nomination to a female African American for a great movie. And you blew it. You didn't give it to her. And I think the reason she didn't get it is her being an African-American woman plays into it. But I think it's more the fact that she's not part of the club. That's really what it is. She's not part of the club. Yeah, you had Richard Linklater, and this is his first nomination. And Alejandro Iñárritu, I think is how you say his name, for Birdman. But like Wes Anderson was on there. There's a bit of an old boys club in Hollywood, and she's just not part of it. And she's probably not part of it because she's an African-American female. Also, notable missing from the Selma is David Oyelowo does not get a nomination for Best Actor for Martin Luther King. These were two that really should have been on there. And I mean, the Best Actor category only has 5, but I mean, this was your chance to really, to disprove the notion that the Oscars is nothing but a big sausage fest. And it is. And we've just proved it. I mean, basically, the nominations said, yes, women can be nominated for Oscars as long as they're actresses or costume designers. But outside of that, no, we're not going to give that to you. It's a shame because they really could have done it. It shows that Hollywood, for as liberal as Hollywood is, it is very much an old boys club. There are a couple surprises. American Sniper got a lot more nominations than I expected, which kind of surprised me because there was this whole controversy of, is this anti-Muslim? Is this movie a farce? Is it inaccurate? Is it glorifying violence? Is it jingoistic? But you know what? American Sniper got a lot more than I expected. Did not get Clint Eastwood a Best Director nomination, but there you go. That happens. Like I said, Foxcatcher was kind of a surprise seeing it show up as much. Whiplash was also a surprise. I expected J.K. Simmons to be nominated for a Supporting Actor Oscar, but Whiplash got a nomination for Best Picture, for crying out loud. That's impressive. Whiplash is a good movie. In fact, of all the movies on the list, the only one I really do not want to see win Best Picture is Boyhood. It's got a lot to overcome because Birdman and the Grand Budapest Hotel, Grand Budapest was one of my favorites of last year. Those each got 9 nominations. Boyhood got a lot of nominations. But Boyhood is a smaller studio, IFC, against Fox Searchlight, which has both Birdman and Grand Budapest Hotel. And here's the thing. Fox Searchlight knows how to run an Oscar campaign. The nominations are over. Now it's time for votes. And they're pushing hard. I think Boyhood is in a pattern of peaking too early, and I don't know if IFC has enough oomph behind it to go up against Fox Searchlight for either of these two movies. The other big snub that a lot of people said was No Lego Movie. Lego Movie got nominated for song. How awesome. Everything is awesome, except for the fact we're also not going to nominate you for best animated film. That's a bit of a sad thing. The Lego Movie's amazing. Honestly, I don't know why it didn't get nominated. I really think it should have. But the Box Trolls is in there. Who knows? I mean, at this point, gosh, animated film, that's kind of a wide open category now. The one I haven't seen for animated film, I have not seen Song of the Sea. But I have a feeling that How to Train Your Dragon 2 might win simply because it's got a lot of love. And boy, DreamWorks is pushing that one hard. Finally, one other surprise that I think was interesting is Laura Dern got nominated for Wild, which is kind of cool. I didn't particularly like Wild, but I liked seeing the fact that she showed up in the nominations list and nobody expected that. So that's a good thing. But the best thing that happened, Oscar nominations, the best thing that happened, greatest moment in Oscar history was when the president of the Academy of Motion Pictures, Art and Sciences was announcing nominees for Best Cinematography. Instead of saying Dick Pope for Mr. Turner, and I think this is funny because she came off of giving the nominations for Ida, which are these thick Polish names for cinematography. And I mean, she got through those, and instead of saying Dick Pope, she said Dick Poop. That had me in stitches. Because that's the worst name you could possibly say. It's 8 letters long, and she messed it up. And she messed it up in the most glorious fashion ever. I am going to start a whisper campaign for Dick Poop to win all the Oscars. Every Oscar ever. This guy probably has heard this before, but he probably hasn't been called this since he got out of grade school. And now we have the president of the Academy calling him that on live international television broadcast. Amazing. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, was I correct? I said $30 million for Taken 3. I was close. It got $39 million. It was actually tracking a little higher. People were thinking it was like 40 or plus 40. But it was $39 million, which is embarrassingly high. It's not nearly as good as the other two. And now they're going to be talking about doing Taken 4. And I love Liam Neeson. I love the fact that he's getting a great career and he's got like a couple of years until he gets an AARP card. And I thought Selma was going to do much better. Selma only made $11 million last week. And that's embarrassing. Selma is a good movie. And in fact, you can see it this weekend for free in select cities if you're a student. I think it's like 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. Screw you if you're in 10th grade. You got to pay. But 7th, 8th, and 9th graders can go see Selma for free in select cities. I think that's awesome. Selma's a great movie. More people should see it. It's relevant to what happened in the 60s. It's relevant to what happened today. Only $11 million. Shame on you, people. Shame on everybody not seeing this movie. And it's a good movie. It's an uplifting movie. People didn't go see it. They went and saw Taken 3. Dear God, what's happening in this world? What's going to happen this weekend? My prediction is American Sniper is going to win. Now, it's an interesting head-to-head because last year we had Lone Survivor, which is much more in line with American Sniper. And then you also had Ride Along coming up the next week. And both of them did very, very well. Ride Along, I think, made more money. The reason I don't think that The Wedding Ringer is going to make as much as Ride Along did, because I think Ride Along was PG-13 to begin with. Second of all, Ice Cube had a certain draw. There's not enough people who care about Josh Gad to go see The Wedding Ringer for Josh Gad. I think there's a lot of people that saw Ride Along, ooh, Ice Cube and Kevin Hart, they'll be funny together. And I think that with The Wedding Ringer, people are going to say, ooh, Kevin Hart and that fat guy, they might be funny together. So I think The Wedding Ringer is going to do well. I think it's good for 25 to 30 million, but I think American Sniper is going to win the weekend simply because it plays to the same audience that Lone Survivor did. I mean, almost exactly, and it's in almost the exact same time frame. Lone Survivor did around $35 million. I think American Sniper is going to do that. It's got a lot of buzz. It did extremely well in limited release. That's the one I think is going to win this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the world-famous DVD roundup. Couple things to note. Gone Girl, which was not nominated for Best Picture. Again, why didn't that get nominated? You had two more slots. Throw that and Foxcatcher in there and at least shut up all the people that are complaining. Or at least some of them. Gone Girl's a great movie. It got some nominations. Rosamund Pike for Best Actress. You can go check it out on DVD and Blu-ray now. Also, Men, Women, and Children, which was not very good at all. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray if you want to not watch it. A Walk Among the Tombstones, another Liam Neeson movie. This one's not even as good as Taken 3, and Taken 3 was not very good. Love is Strange, which is that's a nice little movie. It's not great, but it has some elements to it that are good. John Lithgow and Oscar Molina playing homosexuals who have to sort of redo their life because their living arrangement falls apart. The Two Faces of January, which you talked about on the show a couple months ago. The Scorpion King 4, Quest for Power, is terrible. Now, you'd expect that for the fourth Scorpion King movie. But yeah, it's bad. And I liked Scorpion King 3 because it was directed by one of my favorite genre direct-to-video directors, René Rühl. And he was not directing this one, and it's terrible. A couple TV shows. You've got Boardwalk Empire Season 5. This is the final season. House of Lies from Showtime with Kristen Bell and Don Cheadle. And then Dallas, the new Dallas, Season 3 is available. The stinker of the week is The Identical, because, wow, that was a bad movie. That was a really terrible movie. It's the one about not Elvis. Yeah, it's so out there. It's not a good movie. Avoid The Identical. I mean, everybody did a good job avoiding it in the theater. So I think you'll have a good job avoiding it on DVD as well. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Boy Next Door with J-Lo. Dear God, that's going to be terrible. Also, Mordecai and Strange Magic. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.